More information about the operation. This is Russia is closing in on a key city in Ukraine's eastern region. ABC's Britt Klenit has the latest.
Ukraine says the goal is not to occupy this captured Russian territory in the long term, but still, if it can hold on long enough, part of the attention might be here to use it as leverage for the release of its own land in potential negotiations. But we've also heard a report from the Washington Post now that Ukraine's incursion into Russia might actually be derailing plans to hold indirect talks in Qatar.
New Jersey's governor replacing outgoing Senator Bob Menendez with his former chief of staff, George Samir Helmy. Menendez was convicted on federal corruption charges last month and announced he would step down effective August 20th. Michelle Franzen, ABC News.
Matt Nair on air.
We were talking about Donald Trump. He also said that he knows how to correctly pronounce Kamala Harris's name. He just chooses not to. And so I think that kind of opens it up for us to take some liberties.
Yeah. What would be your fix to the name?
Dave from New Berlin texting in Conald.
Conald.
Dump. Also, Calvin's was Donald Trump.
Who said there's a correct one?
Except, like, it's pronounced Kamala.
Matt Nair on air, weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. The Todd Alba Show.
Chairman of the Wisconsin Democratic Party, Ben Winkler. No, I was involved in politics for 30 plus years. I've never seen anything in the state of Wisconsin like I saw in Eau Claire last week. 2 miles away from the venue, and there were cars parked alongside the road.
It's not just cities, it's rural places and small towns and medium-sized towns. It's everything. Voters realize in this moment they have the power to shape history.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
Max Inc. on Civic Media with Mike and Wendy from Sunspot.
Can you imagine the mosh pit on the bridge that could happen?
Oh, well, that's how the original series was when they moved the camera. Whenever it's like the red alert. The,
right.
Yeah. That was the mosh pit.
Yeah. And everybody had to like fake like.
Right. Lean left. Straight. Lean right.
Yeah.
Join us for all the fun with Max Inc. on Saturday night, 6 to midnight, across the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app.
An unsuspecting driver at a Milwaukee barbershop.
I got an apprentice here shadowing me. I'm gonna put this hot towel on, man. About a good 3 minutes, all right?
The apprentice is Donald Driver.
So when you come here, you drive?
Yes.
Your car got seatbelts?
Yeah.
You wear them?
No.
Okay, but why not?
Because I don't want to.
But do you know you can get a ticket for that?
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna give you a ticket. Bet you wish you buckle up now.
Oh my God.
Donald Driver can't always be there to remind you.
Take it, click it. There we go.
Click it or tick it.
And let's reduce fatalities on Wisconsin roadways. Sponsored by Wisconsin DOT.
I'm James Kelly with WLAK News. Your news roundup in quick podcast form. Find it anytime on the WLAK website at lakeair.radio.
But having a post-secondary degree will often make you more employable.
The future does not look like the present, so having that ability to adapt and learn and upskill and reskill and pick up new skills will definitely be beneficial.
Georgetown's report found that there will be more good jobs on the market by 2031 compared to now. That's partly because policymakers are facing pressure to deliver higher job quality rather than just lower unemployment. I'm Will Walkie. Support for this reporting was provided by Lumina Foundation.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, slight chance of a shower or thunderstorm, highs near 77. Tonight, some patchy fog, a low of 61. For Sunday, sunshine and a high near 81. Mostly clear, 55 Sunday night. On your Monday, sunshine and highs back to the low 80s. Right now, it's 70.
Hey, it's producer Conrad. Pete will be back from vacation Monday with guests Rob Thomas and Bill Leff. The Democratic National Convention is next week, so join the Nightlight stream from 7 to 9 p.m. on Facebook, YouTube, or X.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
You're listening to Lake Air WLAK, Amory's home for Matt Nair on air.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Yeah!
intro.
Thought we'd try out the Stone Temple Pilots for a change.
Right on. That's Todd, everybody. I'm Mark. And you've found the Rational Revolution. So glad you're here. And I'm so glad that this guy's freaking here. I have been trying to get him on the show since I took over from our dear beloved Chris Alfheim. This dude's one of the busiest men in politics. And I'm so honored that he's here. You all know him. A little known fact, we do share a birthday month. All good people were born in December of 1986. This is all around good guy, Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes. Dude, oh my God, in the flesh.
My man, dude, this scheduling has been just so hectic. It's been wild. I've been traveling in and out of state. Got myself more busy than I could have imagined myself being, but it's all good. It's a lot of work to be done.
Now that's awesome. I'm honored and so appreciative that you took time out of your busy schedule, because I know how freaking busy it is trying to get you here. Take some time for little old us and thank you. Like, genuinely thank you.
I know, for sure, man. Thank you for having me, man. Thank you.
So yeah, thank you. So I want to give kind of start off, you know, you served in the assembly, and I think you were you in the Senate as well? You ran for Senate.
Yep.
And then you ran for lieutenant governor. I really want to give our listeners like a behind the scenes of like, what is it like being the lieutenant governor of Wisconsin?
Senates don't want me.
We'll talk about that, which that's crap, by the way. But
yeah, man, I can tell you. So the experience of lieutenant governor, like, most amazing experience of my life for so many reasons, right? Getting to travel and experience all that Wisconsin has to offer, getting to meet so many just incredible people, and being able to learn, honestly, that's probably my biggest takeaway. It was a huge learning experience. And the fact that there were so many people willing to teach, so many people willing to share, whether it's my visits to different reservations, whether it's my visits to family farms, visits to small businesses, all these things like provided something new to me that I had never had a chance to be a part of before. You know, one of the things that stuck out of my first time going to a slaughterhouse, which was wild.
Oh.
Yeah, I know.
You saw everything?
Oh, I saw it, man. I saw it.
Does it make you appreciate a salad a little bit more?
It happened so quick. And the guy wasn't like, hey, it's getting ready to happen. It just happened, right? Like,
oh, my God.
You know, it's just the pride, like you get tased and cow falls to the ground. Off with his head, right? Like, it's
oh my God, that's crazy.
It was wild, right? But it's a thing that I'll never forget, and it just speaks to so many complexities, right? Like folks to step up and do to provide for families across the state and across the country. It also speaks to some of our supply chain issues and having adequate staff, and if we want to keep things, you know, local, we need to make sure we're investing in a small family farm. But yeah, being lieutenant governor, though, I will say it just depends on your relationship with the governor. And I know people in other states who don't necessarily have a great relationship with their governor. And it has made that experience a little more difficult, a little bit challenging. Even here in Wisconsin, we've had situations where the lieutenant governor and the governor didn't have a rosy relationship. Stories would come out all the time about how the administration before ours would sort of keep the lieutenant governor at bay sometimes. And
there's a bookcase in front of that stairwell.
Like, so two administrations. Yeah. This is not any partisan thing, because the administration before that one, there was that issue. There was no bookcase separating my office and the governor.
No.
The record.
Yeah. Now, so how was that? Was it... talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, I got nothing but respect for Tony, love and admiration. Fortunately, you know, had known him prior to him running for governor. When he was superintendent, I was on the education committee, so we had some familiarity.
Oh, yeah.
And then there was just a respect for each other. And I think that when we both ended up on the ticket together, you know, the first thing we did was acknowledge how different we were as individuals.
That was a cool campaign. That was really cool.
Man, it was like, if it was cool to witness, I can't even explain how cool it was to be a part of.
Really?
And like leaning into those differences, right? Like that was the cool part for me. Like I you know, I wasn't expecting him to be like me or to change. And you know, the opposite is also true. And we legit, you know, enjoyed each other's company. And, you know, I still hit him up every now and then. He still takes my calls. I don't abuse that, right? Like, if it's someone who wants, I give him a call and, you know, it just works out that way. So, yeah, having that good relationship made my experience as Lieutenant Governor so memorable.
Yeah, it does. And for the listeners, you know, I hope you remember, you know, some of the, I mean, just the relationship that you guys had on the campaign trail and joking around. And it seemed like you genuinely enjoyed each other's company and had a lot of respect for each other's ideas and could make each other better.
You can't script that. You can't fake that. It'll show up.
So what, and I, this is out of genuine curiosity. They have a governor's mansion. Is there like a lieutenant governor's apartment or only, something, or like, you know,
Pennsylvania, I believe, is the only state with a lieutenant governor's residence.
No kidding. Really?
Yeah. I think Pennsylvania might be the only state.
What the hell? We got to work on that.
Got to work on that.
Yeah. We got to work. And so like, were you in like the cabinet meetings? I know you toured all the state.
Yeah, it was
impact on policy.
Was in the cabinet meetings. And the other part too is, you know, when we were going through the transition, once, you know, we won office and prior to us being sworn in, you know, he asked, what was I interested in? What did I want to do? What issues did I want to take on? I told him sustainability.
Oh, no, that's cool.
Climate change, right? And that doesn't always happen. A lot of times,
that's cool.
The issues, they're just delegated. They'll say, hey, you know, you need to do this, you need to do that. And that's just what it is. And I told him what I wanted to do. And so, got to be a part of those cabinet meetings. Also got to, you know, lead our climate change task force. And I got to also work with all of our state agencies, well, for the most part, a lot of our state agencies on the topic of sustainability, right? It was more than just a task force. It was working with state agencies. It was being a part of some of the things they had going on. I would invite them out to some of our events. They would invite me out to some of their events. And it was just going across the state, just talking about, you know, opportunity, how folks in the state of Wisconsin can thrive and how the state government may had not played a real role in folks' progress before, but this was our opportunity to do so.
Yeah, we're talking with former Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes. How was the transition? You know, that was you smile. How was it?
I'm calling for good reasons, right? Like it was of course hectic, right? There were so many people involved. There were people who've been waiting 8 years to get their issues heard.
Yeah.
During the transition period, we had our transition office and it was just a constant flow of people in and out, talking about whatever issue and how the state needed to prioritize that issue. And, you know, this, for the most part, they were all righteous issues. And I'll say as well, you know, like there were also a bunch of people who were like, hey, you know, need a job. And we had to hire anyway, right? We had to hire people. But then, you know, sometimes you get folks who are just like, hey, can you give my husband a job? It's just like, come on now. That's not how this works. Like he didn't even say, hey, my husband's interested in highways. I think he created the Department of Transportation. It's just like, hey, my husband needs a job. not how things were. I had a legislator that the first thing, before she even congratulated me, she said, hey, can you give my husband a job?
Shut up, really?
That's not how that works.
Oh my God.
I didn't really hear from her much afterwards.
It's weird.
You have a magic wand to employ your partner.
Right. Yeah. That's unfortunate. You know, and I think, you know, it's interesting. It's kind of like when you got into office and, you know, it's almost like George W. Bush and 9/11, how that event changed everything. So you get in what, 2019, elected as the first Black lieutenant governor in state history, and you're like, oh my God, all right, now we can get into, oh crap, here's a pandemic, you know. And it changes the world,
changes everything, man. Truly feel like, you know, got robbed of a year.
Yes. Right.
Stuff, right? Like I wasn't traveling the state at that point, wasn't getting around to as many places as I otherwise would have gotten to, wasn't being able to participate in the events, speaking at the graduations, doing the school, doing the tours to different communities, right? Like all that sort of stopped. I mean, everything went virtual. And I do feel like my time in office was truncated because of the pandemic.
I bet, yeah.
But, you know, at the same time, leaders are, you know, determined, in my opinion, on what sort of tests they face. And that was like an ultimate test of leadership. Yeah. And granted, you know, the things and the fact that we were able to recover so quickly from the pandemic, that falls on the governor, his leadership, and being able to navigate impossible times. But yeah, you know, I mean, I was out there a whole lot, you know, doing the things that would keep people in the state of Wisconsin safe, and also being a part of, you know, those strategy meetings. And that's why I say it was a learning experience, if nothing else. I got to learn how everything functions. And I do believe the governor saw me as a part of the governing team. Otherwise, I wouldn't have been in those meetings. Otherwise, I wouldn't have participated at the level I did, or even be able to build the relationships with cabinet secretaries that I had.
Yeah. I would, you know, can you imagine if we had someone else in there, you know, your opponents from that election? Oh my God.
Elections have consequences.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's real life that happens when people are in office, and there are decisions that get made that, you know, you can go in the direction of prioritizing people's safety, or, you know, you can just disregard people's livelihoods, which could have been the case.
Yeah, that's wild. And, you know, it's, I think, yeah, like you say, it really is a testament to the leadership that we had during that time, that we were able to kind of get through that. As I mean, it sucked anywhere. Three ways to Sunday, but like,
you know, was not fun. It was not fun.
Oh my God. I can't, and I want to ask you about this on the other side, because, you know, there's so much to this, and I want to get back to this on the other side of the break here. We're talking with Manella Barnes here, former Lieutenant Governor. I'm Mark Becker. We'll see you in a little bit.
This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
My friends swim no matter the season, but my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis can sometimes take me out of the moment. Now, thanks to Skyrizi and clear skin, count me in. With Skyrizi, Risankizumab Riza, a prescription-only 150-milligram injection for adults who are candidates for systemic or phototherapy. 3 out of 4 people achieve 90% clear skin at 4 months.
Don't use if allergic to Skyrizi. Serious allergic reactions and an increased risk of infections or a lower ability to fight them may occur. Before treatment, your doctor should check for infection and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms, such as fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, or if you plan to or recently received a vaccine.
Thanks to Skyrizi, there's nothing on my skin, and that means everything. Ask your doctor today about Skyrizi, the number one dermatologist prescribed biologic in psoriasis, and visit skyrizi.com or call 1-866-SKYRIZI to learn more.
You're listening to Lake Air WLAK, Amory's home for Up North News Radio.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
What's up, everybody? We're back here on the Rational Revolution. Mark Becker talking with former Lieutenant Governor and dear friend, Manella Barnes. We're talking about the wonderful time that we all had during COVID. And when did you, like, so obviously, you know, you're the second most powerful person in the state of Wisconsin. When did you guys, like, first your ears perk up about, like, oh, that's kind of messed up about COVID-19? And then what was the moment when you're like, oh crap, we have to do something immediately?
Yes. Right. So you remember late February, you were hearing about stuff.
Yeah.
Late February, when it seemed like it was on the horizon, but nobody's paying that much attention. I remember the first weekend the first weekend in March, I was in New Orleans.
Okay.
And like, that's when it all came down, right? Like, after that first weekend, I'm like, oh boy. First of all, I'm glad I got to go. But, you know, uh-huh. It's just like, by St. Patrick's Day, it was like, you know, that tough conversation where it's just like, okay, well, you know, the other states around us are, you know, starting to make hard choices. And I don't know how we sit and ignore this. You know, we have to start taking precautions.
Yeah. And then, you know, that was just really an incredible period of time. And then you have COVID. And then in the middle of this pandemic, we have the summer of 2020. And let me tell you, so, and I talk about this a lot, you know, I'm a white man grown up in a very white suburb of Green Bay. And it really, I'm embarrassed to say this, but I only say this because I hope it helps people understand. I really, really got my eyes started to be open. I married a black woman. And so, you know, I knew that there was inequality, but then, you know, we just celebrated our 8th anniversary. And so it's like you see these things happen and you're like, oh my God, like that's messed up. That's messed. And then, you know, we go through this great awakening as a society, if you will. And that hits home in Wisconsin. How was that? As the first black lieutenant governor in the state facing this huge, huge wave of, I don't even know what to call it.
Well, a lot of people are having new conversations and there's a certain responsibility that falls.
Yes.
And like, it again, if it already was not easy dealing with the pandemic, having this on top of everything.
Oh my God.
Made it just like, yeah. Dude, I could write a book on all this. Probably should write a book on all this.
You should.
Because there was already frustration, consternation because of, you know, people being on lockdown, lives being just changed in a completely, you know, the idea of work shifting, all this stuff, right?
And then, different communities were affected more by the lockdown than others. You know, like
communities were affected. People's economic conditions, you know, got worse in a lot of areas. Yeah. And then you had all this frustration on top of, you know, the issues around racial justice after killing George Floyd. And, you know, communities were stuck with, you know, all right, well, what is the proper response? And the thing about answering the question about a proper response is the George Floyd, you know, that killing, it happened.
Oh God.
But like topics, the issues that people are bringing up were nowhere near new. Mm-hmm. And so dealing with just generations of, whether it's trauma or dealing with generations of, you know, anguish, frustration at, you know, a system that folks feel as, you know, if it had not been there to protect them, that just led to just a certain anger that was just directed at everybody, right? Like everybody, regardless of, you know, if you were trying to do the right thing or you weren't trying to do the right thing. So it became not just difficult to navigate with folks who were completely dismissive of the issue of racial injustice, and the same people who are trying to determine what books you can read, the same people who are trying to determine what you can learn in the school, the same people who are trying to deny Kamala Harris of her blackness. You know, it's like, even, you know, aside from those folks, like the people, you know, who were out protesting, the people who were out demanding justice, it to them, it felt like a complete, you know, system failure. So it didn't matter. It was so far beyond partisan politics.
And, yeah.
You know, to try to get out there and reason. Like, I know people who were out there, like I know elected officials who were out there protesting every day, right alongside
That's cool.
people. And but they still, even them, they still were, you know, were criticized by somebody about things not happening to the degree that folks feel like things should have been happening. And it's because of the issues that get swept under the rug so often, you know, over the course of time, it builds up. There's going to be a big old lump in that rug, and you think you're just going to be walking to the living room. You're going to trip over it one day, and not only are you going to trip over, you're going to be carrying a hot pot of coffee, and then it's going to be spilled everywhere and on yourself, and now everything is messed up.
You know, and I think you articulate this stuff so well, and I didn't think I was going to go down this road, but so like, what, where are we post summer of 2020? Like, are things
better? Oh, in many ways, I think we've regressed.
Okay, right, you know, right. It kind of feels that way.
It does.
How? I don't get it.
So, well, a lot of the response was performative.
Yeah.
You know? It wasn't necessarily substantive, right? Like, so much was done for, you know, appeasement now. Like, you have an issue like criminal justice reform that barely even gets talked about. And the thing about it, when I was in the assembly, like, you know, Grover Norquist, who's certainly no fan of mine, no liberal by any means, he was on his, you know, Right on Crime tour talking about criminal justice reform, trying to get Republican lawmakers in states to understand why the traditional way of, you know, of criminal justice just was, you know, out of date, why it was no longer effective and also a drain on resources for states. And there were a lot of states where Republican lawmakers were on board, championed reforms, introduced reforms. And, you know, you can even look at the I can't even think of the bill right now. Something that even Ron Johnson voted for. What was the name of this? I can't think of the bill right now. It was obviously top of my mind during the campaign. But like, there are these pieces of legislation that passed at the state level, or a piece of legislation that passed even at the federal level, and now folks are just backing away from it. And the thing is, like, this is something you have to be in for the long term, right? Like, we are, like, this is system-wide change we're talking about. And you also can't implement criminal justice reform without investing in communities as well, to make sure that young people who may have been on a path to the criminal justice system have a diversion, have a clear path to education, have a clear path to a career. And I think that's the biggest piece of it that was never really cemented. And if that's not the case, it could seem like criminal justice reform was a failure because of it.
Yeah. We're talking with former Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes. We're going to continue this discussion right after the break. We're going to talk about where's Wisconsin here with all of this fun stuff leading up to November. See you in a little bit.
You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. If you're buying or selling a home, changes kicking in today aimed at making the real estate process more transparent. Those new rules applying to the agent commission fees now negotiable. Real estate broker Tricia Lee Riley.
What sellers need to understand is that their buyers are coming forward with a buyer's agent that's agreed to work with them specifically, whether it's for a short time or for a long time, but also that they are going to have to negotiate the commissions up front. And they'll also be able to outline specifically how the commissions are paid to both agents.
Donald Trump holding a campaign rally this afternoon in Pennsylvania. Rival Kamala Harris and Tim Walz are there tomorrow. Former New York GOP Congressman George Santos will plead guilty, reportedly at a hearing next week. Santos faces 23 felony charges, including defrauding donors. Hurricane Ernesto still impacting Bermuda after making landfall earlier. Dangerous riptides and waves are the concern along the U.S. eastern seaboard. This is ABC News.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
The Brewers beat the Guardians. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers beat the team with the best record in baseball, the Cleveland Guardians, last night, 5-3. Milwaukee's Aaron Civale held his former team that traded him last year to Tampa to no runs through six innings. Manager Pat Murphy.
I think he's just been really, really solid. I told you guys, I love this kid, man. He's prepared as all get out, and he holds himself accountable. yeah, when I had a rough start or two rough starts, he took on the accountability, you know.
NFL, Packers and the Broncos had their joint practice session in Colorado. Quarterback Jordan Love said the offense was challenged by the Broncos' defense.
There was a couple plays here and there that we missed. It just wasn't our best day productivity-wise, but, you know, it goes back to, you know, just being able to learn and grow from that. You know, seeing this new defense that we haven't really gone against, haven't got a scout, but we'll be able to go back, watch film, and, you know, learn from these opportunities.
The Packers and Broncos preseason game in Denver, 7 o'clock tomorrow night with Sports on Mike Clemens.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, slight chance of a shower or thunderstorm, highs near 77. Tonight, some patchy fog, a low of 61. For Sunday, sunshine and a high near 81. Mostly clear, 55 Sunday night. On your Monday, sunshine and highs back to the low 80s. Right now, it's 70.
Looking for a roundup of the day's important headlines in quick podcast format? Search no more. Find it now on the WLAK website at lakeair.radio. Your news just for the Amory area. I'm James Kelly with WLAK News.
The Todd Alba Show.
Speaking of J.D. Vance, if you're watching on the stream, you can see behind me what we're now calling the J.D. Vance couch. There are some reports that back in the day, during the frat days of J.D. Vance, he may have gotten intimate with a couch. So.
You know, I've slept on that couch a few times, but I can't say I've slept with that couch, and nor do I plan to.
No.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2, on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. It's summertime in Wisconsin, and whatever the weather, it will impact you and your plans.
Should I water the garden? Will our event be rained out? Count on your local Civic Media radio station for in-depth details and the most up-to-date forecast.
Temperatures are rising into the mid and upper 70s under sunny skies.
It's your weather and more for your part of Wisconsin.
On your local Civic Media radio station and streaming on the Civic Media app.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
Stop. That dog does not want to be petted.
A heads up before something bad happens.
You should not send that text.
Uh-oh. Life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes, you can reverse prediabetes and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. To learn your risk, take the one-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free.
Todd Alba.
Hey, this is Aaron, Todd's producer. Todd's in Chicago getting ready to cover the Democratic National Convention. So on our next show, tune in for coverage of the event.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays noon till 2.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Coca-Cola, say, I know you know me.
Welcome back to the Rational Revolution. We got a hell of a guest here, my friend and yours, former Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes. We're talking about, you know, kind of where we are post-George Floyd and, not George Floyd, but I mean, it was the Great Awakening, kind of, if you will. But you're talking about how a lot of the outrage, and it was all like a fad. You know, people made protesting a fad, and nothing really substantial came from it. And that's sad to say, but I think it's kind of true, you know?
Yeah, and I do want to clarify, like, I'm not talking about the folks who were, you know, out there and their,
right,
you know,
yeah.
Right, so but I am
there's
saying
a lot
like
of people that did a lot of good stuff.
A whole lot. A whole lot. But yeah, you know, there's a lot of pop activism.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, no, that's totally true. And one of the unfortunate things that I think came out of that is, you know, when you ran against America's worst Senator Ron Johnson, and he made that entire campaign color and race and fear. And, you know, sans the opinion of, what, 26,000 people, we would have made him stick to his promise of being a two-term senator. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. But I do think that, you know, the worst of people you know, in terms of the underlying racism, all that kind of stuff. That's exactly what happened, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, there's layers.
Yeah.
I mean, there is. You know, yeah. I'll let people make that argument, and I can, you know, specifically, but I can specifically point to the flood of money, right? This is the largest independent expenditure. This is the largest amount of dark money spending in the Senate race. Was outspent by $26 million.
No kidding, really.
In third party spending, $26 million came out to 26,000 votes. You know, so that is a big piece of it as well. And you know, on the other hand, you know, the governor, the outside spending for the governor, he was about $25 million up on his opponent. And this is the third party spending, so this is not irrespective of candidates and candidacy. And so that 26, 25, the $51 million gap between, you know, funding my third party, the third party operation that supported me versus the governor. And we came out to about 51,000 votes separation between myself and the numbers line up almost too perfectly. And the thing is, you know, candidate for candidate, I ended up raising a little bit more money than than this Senator Johnson, but is the third party. It was and the other part about it too is like we're talking about a handful of people. We're talking about Elon and just like a handful of people who put a whole lot of money that wasn't really a dent in their pockets because it's all, you know, resources, benefits that they reap because of the Trump tax law that Senator Johnson voted for.
Yeah,
right. So that was pocket change, right? That was a little bit of the cost savings that they were able to enjoy.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate. And I, you know, I think about this a lot when I see Ron Johnson continuing to peddle the, you know, election denialism and tinfoil hat stuff. And it's like, oh my God. Well, you know, you said at the beginning, me and Senator just don't get along. It's like, I hope that we haven't heard the last from you. And I know you're doing something now. Talk about that why you're so freaking busy.
Yeah, man. You know, as I tell everybody, there are a lot of folks who put a whole lot into me, put a lot into my campaign.
You're worth it, dude. You're a good dude. You're well, absolutely worth it. That money's well spent. And I mean, time and everything. You. Yeah.
I sincerely appreciate that. Not even fishing for compliments. I'm saying, but you know, like so many people showed up for me in just incredible ways. And for me to just walk away because we didn't win would feel sort of selfish.
Yeah.
You know, I know people who don't win and they end up moving, like leaving the state completely.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, well, if that was what this was about, then why are we even in the race?
Yeah.
But Milwaukee is home. Wisconsin is home. I made a commitment, like even getting into the race, that I would do everything I could to try to make this place better for everybody. And that commitment stands. And I said, whether I was going to run for office, whether I'm in office or not, the work still has to get done. And so since I've been out, been up to a couple of things. One is Power to the Polls, Wisconsin, and we're focused on civic engagement, focused on infrequent voters. We actually were very active in Green Bay. Our organization helped flip the Green Bay City Council. And, you know,
that's awesome.
If you need that statement validated, you can ask the mayor on that one.
No, I know he's a friend. He's the old god. Yeah.
He will tell you as much. You know, Power to the Polls was the only outside spender.
Wow.
In
I didn't realize that. Rate. That's awesome.
Yeah. And I say too, you know, I look at what voter turnout could have been, and like, I got a lot of reasons to be frustrated and upset, but you know, I can channel that frustration into productivity. And so standing up a large scale organization that is going to focus its efforts on driving voter turnout, going back to my roots as a community organizer, is something that means a lot to me, something I want to be involved in. Another group I started actually is called Forward Together Wisconsin. And Forward Together Wisconsin is focused on primarily focused on implementation of the Inflation Reduction Act.
Nice.
So many syllables, man. So many syllables. But the IRA is the single biggest piece of legislation to reduce emissions and combat climate change in the history of the world. Unfortunately, a lot of folks don't know about it or how to take advantage of those resources. So forwardtogetherwi.org, you can find out how you as an individual can save money as a business, as a nonprofit. And I've been able to marry my passions, right? Like climate change, as I mentioned at the top of the show, was a big deal for me, still is a big deal for me, equity and sustainability. So starting this organization gives me an opportunity to continue that work. Another project also I'm involved in is called the Democracy Defense Project. And that is it's in a number of battleground states across the country. But here in Wisconsin, it is a bipartisan effort. There are four of us, two Democrats, two Republicans, and we are talking about election integrity. We just did a With Politics panel 2 days ago.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So a couple of Republicans, former Congressman Scott Klug, former Attorney General J.B. Van Hollen, and I was in the state legislature when Van Hollen was AG.
Yeah.
Always nice enough dude. Just didn't agree on things. But now we're here and we're talking about the cause of democracy and how to instill faith in safe and secure elections that take place in Wisconsin and lifting up our poll workers.
That's cool. And I know it's funny, my brother lives in D.C., and I'm going to embarrass the ever-loving hell out of it. You know the story, because I messaged it to you, but he was he just messaged me like in the morning, frantic, in all caps. He's like, oh, my God, I almost just ran over Hot Mandela Barnes. And then... and that's what he refers you as. And so you were in D.C. working on stuff, and you've been in New York, and I mean, you're everywhere, dude.
Yeah, I mean, still doing speaking engagements, right? Like, since the time I spoke at a number of state Democratic Party dinners, headed to Memphis in a couple weeks to speak there, one of their party dinners. And for the DNC, I'm going to be going to a number of state delegation breakfasts.
Oh, nice.
Giving speeches there, so...
What so I want to ask is that, number one, where are we as a country? Should we be nervous? Should we be hopeful?
If the last 8 years have taught us anything, is to, I guess, always be not necessarily nervous, but aware. I really can't answer the question. We're going to find out where we are
right.
in the country in just less than 3 months.
Of a checkup coming up, man.
I am optimistic, right? Like, I've been optimistic before, though, and have been let down. at this point in 2020, if you asked me, I would have said that, Biden would beat Trump by at least 5 points.
Mm-hmm.
As we know, it was a 1-point race. Mm-hmm. So less than a point. And I do feel optimistic. I feel good about things. I feel like we have a real shot here, but I don't want to get too optimistic, right? Like, I just want to make sure we're doing the work. I want to encourage others to do so and get involved as if we're down by a point.
Yeah. And so, I'm thrilled that Kamala Harris is at the top of the ticket. I think she's absolutely incredible, and I can't wait to see her fillet Donald Trump on national television.
Yeah.
But that's going to be sweet. But, we got Tammy Baldwin. She was on the show in studio, and she's it looks like up, a good amount against perennial candidate for office and California resident Eric Hovde. So that's good. And she mentioned the new maps. How that's going to be a game changer for Governor Evers.
New maps are certainly for a whole state. We have candidates in 97 districts this cycle. So, the energy that down ballot tickets or down ballot races can generate shouldn't be understated. We got candidates who are out there running grassroots campaigns, knocking on doors. People are showing up to community events, showing up to meat raffles, showing up to whatever the event may be. I think it does the whole cause some good, because it is a presence of a candidate who is a Democrat when that may not have otherwise been the case. And I guess I forgot to mention my own PAC, because yeah. That's the first thing that I did. So I did start a political action committee. It's called The Long Run. And I guess I didn't mention
talk about that. You, yes.
Yeah. So the PAC, not my job. I don't take a single dime from the PAC. I do not get paid by the PAC at all. We raise money and invest those resources in candidates across the country. Certainly Tammy Baldwin, you know, we've done a lot to support her. And now that these primaries are done, we look to support our congressional candidates as well. And the goal is to support those candidates typically who are labeled different, right? Like there was a commercial from one of the third party groups that said, it just ended by saying Mandela Barnes, different, that's you know, and cool. We all obviously knew what that was about. And during the debate, the first debate, you know, the moderator gave us a chance to clarify anything. And I said, well, you know, I want to talk about, you know, the commercial that ended by saying Mandela Barnes different, but I don't want to push back on it. I want to embrace it. I think yeah. The problem is too much of our politics are the same.
Yeah.
The homogeny of how homogenous the U.S. Senate is the reason things don't get done for working people. The fact that we have basically a singular perspective in the United States Senate is why progress has been impeded. And I think we need more people who are different if we want things to change. And, you know, I do feel that candidates that get labeled different have a chance, and people in general who are labeled different have a chance to go on to make the biggest difference. And we want to be able to support them.
That's awesome. And I know we have, we're running up on the clock here, but I do have one question. I'd be remiss if I wouldn't ask, what's next for you? Are you going to run for something?
I'm going to tell you, like, honestly, like if the moment calls for it, yes, I am more yes than no. I'm certainly open to running, but like, do I have my sights set on something in particular? At this moment, I don't. I can honestly say, 2023 was a great year for me on so many levels.
I'm happy
this
for you.
This year has been great too. It's just hard to compare it to last year. And I'm getting to do the things that I care about, right? Like, it's not like I'm completely out. It's not like I'm not still engaging at a certain level, although, you know, it's not being in office, but I don't think you have to be in office to do the work.
Yeah. You can breathe a little bit, you know,
and
be, you know, a little more free of what you want and choose what you want to do.
Yeah.
You know, I do hope that some sort of an election does cross your path again. Because I think you're just an incredibly genuine person, and you have a heart of service. And I thank you again for being who you are, being my friend, and everything that you've done for this community and the state. Thank you for your time, brother.
I appreciate you, man. Thanks for having
me. Appreciate it, buddy. You too. Thank you so much. Russian Revolution. We talked to Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes. Thanks.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Most of us can agree everyone deserves the right to make their own medical decisions. Politicians should have no say at all.
Thankfully, we have leaders like Vice President Kamala Harris who are standing up for our rights to make our own medical decisions and protect abortion rights. As Vice President, Kamala Harris helped lead the administration's efforts to protect abortion rights after the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. Vice President Harris has worked to defend access to emergency medical care and support the ability to travel for reproductive care. She's fought for access to high-quality, affordable contraception and strengthened reproductive health privacy. Vice President Harris has defended our rights and freedoms against right-wing extremists who want the government to make medical decisions for us. She's a champion for our rights.
Visit www.abwt.org/Kamala and tell Vice President Harris, keep fighting for our freedom to make our own medical decisions. Paid for by A Better Wisconsin Together, Inc.
Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Ooh. Thanks for sticking around here on the Rational Revolution. You know, so I'm kind of like, I look at what I do here on the radio. I'm still a rookie. And so, you know, Todd the God here, who's kind of my coach and everything, like, I try to do my best, and I work on, like, the intros and the outros, and sometimes it's like, you got the rational, you know, it's just a jumbled mess of, you know, word salad. And so, you know, I appreciate everyone giving me the time to grow into this and all of that, but I am, it's such a fun thing to do. It really is a blast. And, you know, selfishly, because I get to talk to incredible people, you know, like Tammy Baldwin and Mandela Barnes and, you know, and whoever we're going to have coming up. It's going to be wonderful. Ben Wickler, everybody. This is so cool. And it's such an honor to bring all of this to all of you. And so thank you for all of that, as I see my son waving in the window there. And speaking of Mandela Barnes, what an incredible person, you know, and I hope that, you know, I got to know him during the campaign pretty well, and I have such an infinite amount of respect for him. He's someone, you know, I always say that if my phone would get stolen, I'd have a huge problem because of all the contacts I have in there. But Mandela is one, he's always picked up my phone call. He has always texted me back. He's such, and I'm a nobody, and he's the lieutenant governor. He's such an incredibly wonderful person. And I really hope that his life of service is not over, because, you know, we were so well served by someone that is such a deep thinker and kind-hearted person as him. But I kind of want to pivot a little bit to a conversation that I had with my wife. And I want to talk about a couple different things, you know, explicitly the rise of extremism. And Lieutenant Governor Barnes hit on this a little bit when we were talking about where are we? You know, did we really grow as a society? And he said, meh, you know, and that scares me because, you know, I talked about being this basic white guy without a ton of experience that Mandela has had, or that my wife, who is a black woman, has had. And she said that, you know, growing up, if she would go into a place, or if she was somewhere where, you know, as a person of color, you know, you don't go, there's some hesitation. There's, you know, you just shut up and you leave, you know, which is a sad thing to say in today's society. But she said what's so different about society now is with the rise of extremism brought to you by your friends in the Donald Trump campaign, with that rise of extremism and hatred, people are emboldened and they have the courage to now say the thing. And, you know, whether it is someone who is a person of color, whether they are a member of the LGBT community, you know, as we were driving to the polls, and, you know, there's a guy here, Elijah Behnke, that has on his signs conservative family values. We know with that, say the thing, you don't like gay people, you know, and they have the courage, and if you call it that, it's not courage. But they're emboldened to spread that hatred. And you know, you have this thing in the back of your head where, well, do I go into this place because someone's gonna say something, someone's gonna do something, you know? And that rise of angst has led her to potentially look at, well, she not potentially, she started filling out passport applications for our children. And ourselves. And so it's like, but that's a real thing. That's a scary thing. And, you know, how do we move past this? How do we get through this? And it's you, for as emboldened as they are to spread hatred, and for as emboldened as they are to spread bigotry. We have to be emboldened to push back on that every chance that we get. So it's not so much to say, oh, well, we just shut up and go away. No. I think you and I have the responsibility to stand up and say, okay, well, this isn't right. And for people that are in the middle, purple, you know, former Republicans like myself, we have a responsibility to call out, this is the second thing I want to talk about, the hypocrisy in the GOP. And, you know, it's something. I saw a video of Nikki Haley talking about how I hope Donald Trump wins, but he's not going to win, talking about, you know, crowd sizes and all these things. It's like, but then this is the woman who said she wasn't going to vote for the guy because she doesn't think he could stand up to Putin and he's unstable and all of these things. And so here she is going on national television saying that she hopes he wins. And so it is up to us to be able to stick your feet in the sand and dig in your heels and say, wait a minute. And not to do it in a way that's disrespectful and not to do it in a way that divides, because that won't do anything. And as we talked about with Mandela Barnes, you know, about where this country is going, and my wife, you know, seeing that this could be an unrecognizable place, so filling out passports. Do I think it will come to that? Well, no. But everybody thinks it won't come to that until it happens. And it is happening, and we have to be aware of this, because this extremism, this will not go away. You know, Donald Trump doesn't lose. He doesn't. He blames someone else. He blames something else. And then that happens. You know, he talked about how Joe Biden was unconstitutionally removed from the ticket. And we talked about how I believe it was a George Washington-esque moment of selflessness. I mean, we have to look at these lies, these things that are making our communities divided. And we have to stand up to them. That is the issue. And so if there's anything that comes from this show, even if it's me being selfish and talking to really cool people and being able to bring it to you, if you get something out of this, I want you to have the courage of your own convictions. And as this song plays, I get all emotional, as I love my friend Kristen. Have that courage to say the thing, to stand up for what is right, because that is all we have between us and the devil, as they say. Love y'all. Thanks for sticking around. Mark Becker on the Rational Revolution.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Matt and Air on Air.
Pat Kreitlow. Monday morning, we're in Milwaukee getting set to board the train as we preview this week's Democratic National Convention in Chicago.
Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday mornings starting at 6.
Covering all the news that affects you with humor and a unique perspective. Matt and Air on Air with Jane Matt and Air. Weekdays 10 till noon on Lake Air 107.5 FM and 1260 AM WLAK and on the Civic Media app.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us. You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. Former GOP Representative George Santos is expected to change his plea in court next week in federal fraud case. He's facing 23 felony counts, including defrauding donors. Here's ABC's Aaron Katursky.
Sources familiar with the case told ABC News George Santos is expected to plead guilty during a hearing Monday in federal court here on Long Island. Those sources cautioning the erratic former Republican congressman could always change his mind.
It is not clear what charges Santos may agree to in that plea.
plea. Former President Trump holding a rally today in Pennsylvania. Earlier this week, Trump detailed his economic plan and criticized rival Kamala Harris for her economic agenda. Her running mate, Tim Walz, is campaigning in Omaha, Nebraska today. There is renewed hope of reaching a Gaza ceasefire deal following this week's brokered talks. Mediators will reconvene in Cairo next week. Hurricane Ernesto losing some steam after making landfall in Bermuda today, but still packing winds up to 80 miles per hour. This is ABC.